This is Charles Michael Rolfe at 17153 Chapin Road on December 26, 1989, taking an interview of World Rolfe, sponsored by the Chesning High School Honors English class. What do you remember about your early farm life?
I suppose, starting out as a boy, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, well, the first thing, I guess, was as a young feller, why you spend a lot of time mowing the lawn in the summertime. And you haul wood all winter, keep the fire going, and shovel paths and what have you. Then as you got into your 7, 8 years old and what have you, why you learned to milk cows, which in them days we all always did it by hand. Chickens to feed, and hogs to slop. And, well, just everybody had their chores to do. Clean the barns and what have you. Like I say, I think I was about 7 years old when I started milking cows. And in general, maybe the average farmer had 5 to 10 cows in them days. And you, of course, like I said, it was all by hand. We didn't have machines. They might have had them, but we never seen them. Field work was done with the teams. This was first tractor my dad had, I think, was maybe an old Fordson he got from his uncle. And that would have been probably 1936 or 7, along in there. Next tractor was, I think it was 39. He bought a brand new RC case, and that was on steel wheels. Got it out of the big city open. Crops was, of course, half the farm pretty near retained animals. You grew your hay and oats and corn. To feed them, what was left over, what you could sell.
Milk
or cream, we used to separate a lot as a kid. And if you didn't have, you know, milk was down or didn't have that many cows to really send enough milk, why you separated and then just sold the cream, made butter, this type of thing. Raised soybeans back in them days, they was unheard of. We did raise white beans. Guess we could go into them a little bit with the old all thresh machines. There was no combines at that time yet, and there was the old case. And Bidwell Beaners, they was the most popular, and it seemed, in our area at least. And the beans were pulled and bunched and thrashed out of the field if conditions were right. Sometimes they were put in the mow, like you would put in hay, put them up with slings. And then, of course, when the come time to get them out of there, why, it was a very, very dirty, nasty job. All that bean dirt and whatever. It was one terrible wet fall. They got a staking system going in the country. say, I can't remember the, it had a name, I can't remember what it was. But anyways, everybody in the country, it seems, went to the local sawmill and had 2x2 oak post sawed. And you would take these posts and drive them in the ground and then put about 6 to 10 inches of straw around them and stake your, build nice stacks around these stakes and top them off real good. Wet beans or beans that didn't ripen evenly, what have you. This was done in later years with headlands that tend to be on the green side and stake them. But the bean would dry out and come out of there almost as good as if it ripened on the vine. And that was done a lot, especially if it was wet at all. People in them days just seemed to get out there and they'd stake them summer guns up. Of course, with the machinery today, why, some of this stuff is almost impossible due to the acreage and you just wouldn't be out there staking beans, I guess, and then try to thresh them with a combine. But, so we did do it with combines. We pull up to a stake or stack and after it was froze or whatever. And by the way, a lot of these, really what got that started, we had a terribly wet fall this one year, way back in the 30s. And the beans were, in our case, was pulled and in windrows. And we went right out in water, ankle deep in places, and picked them beans out. And the stakes were all put up in the yard where it was high and dry, as it turned out. And we lugged all them beans out of the water, a little wagon load at a time, and staked them up there in the yard. And then later on in the fall, when they dried and everything was well, I pulled up there with a little combine and to work we went.
I guess you could say that them navy beans, beets in some people's case, were depending on the ground you was on, a little bit of milk or cream, and occasional crate of chickens, and what extra corn you had over your feed. This was kind of our cash crop in them days. For his work in the ground, it was on a very small scale, but done pretty much like it is today. We didn't have these nice big tractors and what have you, but it eventually got done. That old team of horses keep plugging along. One of the unfond memories of my day was, still do a little bit, pick up a stone now and then. But over where, when I was a boy, we lived over there on Gasper and Ditch Road, and quite stony. And every year when you got your plowing done, you'd kind of work it down a little bit. Then you'd go out and pick up stones. We had what we called our stone wagon, which was just essentially the, at that time, a gravel box on a wagon. Off of every land, we'd get a load of stone. So, like I say, that's kind of on fond memories. Tons upon tons upon tons of rocks. I guess no wonder some of our dads and grandpas died a little young. Sure throwed a lot of stuff around that seemed unnecessary. Oh, speaking of stones, maybe this is off the subject a bit, but had a stone crusher cross the road from the school on Ditch and Almond Road. And sat there day after day, listening to that thing crunch and groan, cracking rocks up into the crushed stone like you do see around once in a while. Most of the driveways in our neighborhood are covered with them. Makes a very good foundation. And I guess corn and what have you is, well, crops back then, I don't think the yields was there and like we have today. Of course, in many cases we didn't have the hybrids and what have you. The fertilizers were used pretty sparingly, actually. They used the animal waste. And our ground was in much better condition back then than it is today. All these chemical fertilizers and heavy machinery is, care what anybody says, it's playing a little havoc with it. You can't roll big old tractors and stuff across this wet ground, and we've had some wet years, of course. Have to take into account that it ain't always been that way, but still and all, it does pack this whole ground down, that fertilizer, and our rotations are very poor compared to what they used to be. We trying to rotate things, but just they got the chance that you had when you was a diversified in crop. Now everybody raises maybe two or three things where it used to be so many different things. So it's hard to keep going on it. Guess you could say the cash part of our farming was basically the navy beans and milk. We always milked a few cows and did that for years. Later, after World War II, Dad and I milked together for a few years. We got right up into where we had a milking machine even, so a great deal of help there. And then, of course, the bulk milk started coming in and kind of put a lot of us out of business because we didn't want to get into the expense of the big conversion. And old canned milk went on for a long time, but it wasn't grade A milk, and what a lot of it was what we called cat and dog milk, and not a lot of money into it. So eventually we got out of the milk business. I still raised the white beans for a lot of years, in fact right up until about 4 or 5 years ago, whatever that wet year, it's a terrible wet fall, and I lost one of the best crops of white beans I ever had. So the heck with it all, I'd get along without them. Of course, we'd been raising soys for a time, and they stand the weather a lot better. That stone crusher I was telling you about, I guess I never did get around to saying that how that used to dust the schoolhouse up, and that thing crunching there was kind of hard to study all day, but crunch, crunch, crunch all day long over across the way. And used to be kind of amusing, though, because once in a while they'd drop an old stone in there, and what we'd call the old blue rocks, they're just harder and hard. And that bugger catch one of them just right, and it might shoot at 30, 40 feet right straight in the air. Everybody ducked for cover, which they had there for the men working. It come down on top of the shelter or hit the ground with a terrible thump, or if it happened to hit one of the old trucks they was using, put a real good dent in the top or hood of that thing. It was about the only enjoyment there was to a stone crusher to us kids. Our winter's course was spent going to school and doing chores. There was always the barns to clean, and cows to milk, in our case, and hogs. We always had a few of them around too. And then putting up wood. We used to put up wood just like with the thrashing crews. Everybody get their wood pile up, huge ones, because most of us, that's all we did burn back then. Sometimes a little coal involved, but mostly the wood. And like I say, everybody get the big old wood pile put up, and then they just start out with a buzzsaw, maybe four or five, six neighbors, and they just go from one to the other, cutting and stacking wood. And of course, this was always done through the winter for the next winter. You know, I always tried to put wood up a year ahead of time. And it was a lot of good times had, but boy, sure cut some wood on some mighty cold days, handling that thing covered with snow and maybe zero weather. Anyways, yeah, I guess it was fun. Also back then, in the wintertime, there was a few days spent, in our case, one of our neighbors had a building there that he converted into what we called the ice house. And we went down by East and the whole cells in the gravel pit, and we cut blocks of ice, about 18, 20 inches square, and however deep it might be froze, which would be anywhere from a foot to maybe the 20 inches. And of course, these were all hauled up and put in the ice house. You'd put in to start with, you had a layer of sawdust, hit the old local sawmill again, bring home loads of sawdust and put a layer in the bottom, and then a layer of ice, and then a layer of sawdust, and a layer of ice, and so on. And this was put in there, of course, for the following summer, and it held you pretty well through the whole summer long. With the old ice box, you know, the refrigerator wasn't invented yet, in case of out in the farm, anyway. Yeah, so winters was pretty busy. Time you took care of all them chores. Used to have a lot of fun putting that ice up, and then, of course, maybe after you got that done, why, take the evening off and go skating somewhere, find a pond there or on the gravel, sometimes down there on them gravel pits, but generally a farm pond, and just down the ditches. Used to even go down on Prairie Farm, skate down in there on the big old dike ditch. And all that ice, by the way, was all cut with a cross-cut saw. You take your one-man saw. Didn't have a one-man, you took a cross-cut, took the handle off of one end, and just went to work. Never put up any with a chainsaw in later years. I guess probably that would have been real boon to cutting ice, but I guess what I haven't said here is that the farms back when I was a boy, you didn't hear of, in our area anyway, of cash cropping. Everything was family farm, and you had a little bit of everything. The milk, the pigs, the crops, and the like. And, I guess the average farm was kind of about 80 acres, 100 maybe. There was a lot of 40-acre farms, a lot of 60s. 80s was, like I say, kind of average. Once in a while, 100, 120, and 160. When you're getting up in there, you was getting into big stuff. That was a lot of farming. You needed probably 4 to 6 good horses then, and of course a couple of pretty decent fellers to run them. Times have sure changed a lot. Charlie, you ask what affected bean prices in those days in comparison to today. Well, I expect the markets, stock markets and what have you, just the same as it is today. Things were so much slower back then. And as a kid, why, all that business never worried me. So, but I think it was the same. The big difference is today, why everything's computerized and whatnot. They sit down there at the office and poke some buttons. Back then, they put the price up on the board in the morning when they could get call in and get the price, put her on the board, and that was it for the day. If they went up or down in between, why, you lost or they did. But nowadays, why, you call down to the elevator and if soybeans are $6, we'll say, you say, yeah, I'll take it, or gamble, and lots of times they can be up a few pennies or they can be down a few before you can even get there. Things change so fast. Like I say, in the old days, why, they just put a price on the board in the morning, and that was it for the day.
How'd you keep the milk cool?
Oh, the milk. I guess we got by that. Well, back then, why, we just had water coolers. Or the water cooler when I was a kid was Granddad had built a milk house on the back of the house, actually, and the tank in it was just a cement tank. It'd be just like a water tank out to, that the animals would drink out of, only smaller in comparison. And we had there a windmill, and that, so the windmill pumped water out to the barn to the tank, but it went through the tank in the milk house so that it would keep fresh cold water in there, and then as it overflowed it went on out to the barn. So and a lot of people just, well, when I was a real small kid, and we had a flowing well. Of course then we just had a very little milk, like a can or a can and a half of milk. Why, you would put that in a barrel half and just let this flowing well water run through there and keep it cool.
Now they were in cans?
Yeah, just 10 gallons, just milk cans, 10 gallon milk cans. And that was until they got, oh shucks, that was after the war before we ever got a electric milk cooler. It was always cooled by hand before that. And then a lot of it was, if, like I was saying, if their milk got down, so it wasn't hardly worth spending a can of milk, let's say. Maybe it was only getting a half, two-thirds of a can, I think. Then a lot of times we just separated. And then we'd make butter, cheese, cottage cheese. And then the excess was fed to the skim milk, fed to the pigs or chickens. Warm milk to the chickens and made them lay eggs good in the wintertime. So this was, again, the kind of the difference between cash crop and, well, the family farm. Maybe you didn't have a lot of cash crop. In other words, the beans and wheat was primarily cash. but you just utilized what you had. You lived well because you had your own butter. You could grind your flour and make wheat or bread.
Alright, what were early tillage practices? Would they do?
Well, I've got some of that on there. Primarily, I think, just like we said today, of course, nowadays they have chisel plows, and there's no such thing as a chisel plow then, of course. So, plowed, and like I said, you followed right up with a smooth roller. Very seldom used cul-de-sacs. We had one, but rarely ever used it. But what you wanted to do is firm the ground down because hold the moisture and you get it rolled down. And picked up your stone and good old rocks in it, and then just dragged whatever. And planted your crop.
Planting.
Yeah. Well. Planting was primarily the same as it is today. Only you only had a. You drilled. In most cases, you drilled everything there. You had a corn planter, let's say, to plant a couple rows of corn at a time. A lot of folks, when I was a young feller, they was people planted corn by hand. They had what they called a hand corn planter. They just go along and put it in that way for a long time to do a field of corn. Then your corn was, but however it was planted, two rows of standard corn planter. With a team, and then when the tractors started coming, smaller tractors that would turn around and the like, in other words, the row crop type, which was about in the late 30s, by then they cut the old tongue off that son of a gun, put her behind the tractor, and away you go. then your tractors, you had I cultivated a lot of crop with a one-row horse cultivator, you used a team of horses in most cases. It was people who would use just a little cultivator with one horse go down between rows, but mostly the cultivators were, you rode on them, and you could steer them with your feet, had pedals on there, and you could keep them so that, on the rope, so the horse, he didn't have to walk all that perfect, because you could steer that cultivator there. The cultivator had one row. Real fussy, you always carried a stick along, a couple feet long or whatever, and if you happened to goof and cover up a stalk of corn, you stop the old horse, and you reach down there and flip him out on him under the dirt. and then the corn, of course, was cut with a binder and shocked, just like you used to shock oats and wheat and all that stuff. And it was taken up in the fall. And I remember my dad husking a lot of corn by hand, just take it in the barn and shock the corn at a time, take it in, husk it out, fed the fodder to the animals, and use it for bedding and whatever. Then of course there were the corn huskers. You probably know what a corn husker is.
You could go into that.
Well, a corn husker was for corn, just like a threshing machine was to wheat and oats or to beans. You'd take your bundles of corn and feed them into it. It would automatically snap the ears out, and the rest went through and was chopped up and blowed into a pile or in the mouth to use for feed or bedding again. And your husked
corn would come out in the wagon. Like I say, it worked just like a driving thing.
What kind of weed control did you have?
Well, controlling the weeds was basically the cultivator and the hoe. Again, you didn't have the acreage that you have today. And you rarely see a man out hoeing anymore because he's sprayed. And occasionally a fellow will get out with a hoe and catch him occasionally here and there. But back then, why, again, with these type of cultivators we had, they're slower and all, but done an awful nice job of cultivating. And then you hoed. I wore a hoe out one summer just in a cornfield. Of course, that was helped along by nicking rocks as you go again, because stony ground was hard. You carried a file in your hip pocket, and sometimes you file that thing 2-3 times just going across the field. But there was no sprays, or we never seen or had nothing like that around. And also, I think back in there someplace, we talked about a little bit of crop rotation, and that kept our weeds down quite a little. Your fields would come out of crops. By the time you got around to oats and you planted or clover or alfalfa in there and went into that, this killed or fixed a lot of your weed problems. You know, and it just rotation. Well, then again, the crops was brought in and thrashed if it was weedy, or in the days of the early combines, they all had cleaners on them, and the weeds was put, wheat seeds, and like was put into bag, you know, and you could dump a bag out here, and it'll rot. Today's combines is all, they're the best weed sowing machines that was ever manufactured, because you combine and everything's dumped back on the ground, including the weed seed. So if you've got a weed problem, you do a beautiful job of sowing. Where back then, most of it was run through what's called the recleaners. You've probably seen them on combines or molecular machines or anything that have them now. So, but basically the rotation, the cultivator, and the hoe were your first weed defense.
Okay. Along with the Mexican labor, is that what?
Well, the Mexican labor was basically used in the sugar beets in our area. The other areas, of course, it was in orchards and all that. We had Mexican people lived around us because there was some people, especially like down on the prairie and around, and some of the locals around did raise some beets. We never, ourselves, I've never raised a sugar beet or in my life. Now, I worked in them one time downtown prairie, the Chilton's down to Fergus. Granddad Rolf had a 29 or 30 truck, and it had a rack on it. He used to haul peas to the vineyard, which they raised a lot when I was a kid, peas and sweet corn out of it. And Grandpa used to raise peas some. And he had this truck that he hauled to the vineyard. He had the rack made special. I can't tell you the dimensions anymore, but anyways, it was made different than a normal truck rack a little bit, because then the boxes these would fit in there. So it'd just make a nice square load. And him and I took that truck down to my uncle's down to Ferguson. Or my mother's uncle, I should say. But anyway, we, for a few days, spent quite a lot of time shoveling, or with a typical beet fork, you know. The beets was pulled and topped and thrown in piles in them days. And so we'd take the truck and we'd just go from pile to pile, pitch them all on with the fork, take them down to the train. They had a weigh station right there, just back south of the Fergus store. And we'd weigh them buggers up, pull upside of a boxcar, and shovel them all off, and by hand, go and get another load. And that was my beat experience as far as raising myself. We just didn't do it.
Okay. Were there many problems with pests, and how did you control them?
Well, there was pests to a certain extent. And corn borer was the worst one, I guess you'd say. There was rust in wheat, which was caused by a weed, what makes the name of that, or a briar. A briar. Oh, goodness. Used to find it growing around the base of trees. Anyways, whatever they call that, would cause a rust in wheat. And that was kind of bad for a time until I discovered what it was all about. Started killing that off. And corn borer. But in the old open pollinated corn that we used to have, it was a softer corn and like, but the corn borer got so bad that come harvest time, you get out there and you'd have an awful job with it because it'd be tipping over. And, and this is when I started working on it, coming out hybrids, and the corn borer, he still could seem to be there, but it didn't, the stalk was much stiffer, and it didn't tip over, and all that stuff. But the corn also was kind of funny, because the corn was also harder, the kernel itself, and when I was a kid, used to hear the old boys talking about, oh, that stuff ain't no good because of the pig farmers, or if you're feeding some pigs yourself. They said it was so hard, the pigs didn't like it. They wouldn't make their teeth sore and everything else. Well, that all come to pass, it seemed like, but there's quite a difference in the corn. And again, I think it all went back a lot of it to rotation, but the corn borer and this rusty wheat thing, I can't think of the name of it. It was just a little briar thing that grew up. It wasn't very big that any I ever seen, maybe 18 inches, real prickly, almost like a raspberry thing, but for some reason. Some of the old books or something, you'd be able to find that maybe. Yeah, there was always problems. But flies was the worst. Of course, where everybody, the barnyards, you know, hog pens and whatnot. Yeah. the flies were terrible because you had these big old manure piles. And they just breed something fierce in there. And on a hot summer's day, the other side of a porch ceiling like that out there, let's say, why, that would be just, the whole thing would just be black with flies. And we used to make fly traps
out of a door screen and make a cone in the bottom, and maybe we put some honey or jelly or whatever in there. When the flies, they come to that. Well, then when they go to fly off, they tend to go up. Well, they get up in this cone and there's a hole in there. It's like an upside down funnel. They go in there and, well, that thing gets full of flies. You went clean that up once in a while. And then the door, by the door is like mom and grandma or any of them old girls, they take a flower sack and cut, roll it all up, have all cut the strips, and make kind of like a whisk broom thing out of it, and hang it by the door. They brush the flies away just to get them out. They were bad. Both people don't know what flies are today at all.
But woodchucks.
Oh, yeah, woodchucks were one of our great things. They burrow around in the fields. Of course, they do that today, too, but we don't have the woodchucks like they did back then, I don't think. I can remember one neighbor got a new combine. It was one of the big old international pull types, they were a heavy old machine. We was thrashing wheat or oats, and a woodchuck had burrowed around out in there, and by golly, we dropped that old machine into that, and we had to hook a couple of tractors on just to get it out. It just went right down on the air. Got the woodchuck, too. He went flying out. We got him running down. But and when I was a kid, I got the old 22 around here yet. My dad, he'd buy shells and send me back in the woods. There's a big old stone pile back there. And of course, a box of shells back then was about 15 cents. And I'd go back there and lay behind a tree or a stump, watch for a woodchuck to stick his head out of that old pile of stone, and pick them off. Oh, I learned to get them guys real when I was real young. Found one time out in the field, he got his head in a can, tin can. Couldn't get it off, and he wandered around until he died out in the field. But yeah, we had them, of course, in our area where the ground was kind of gravelly over there, or part of it was, and stony and whatnot. And them stone piles, they just loved them. And everybody had three or four to a dozen or stone piles on 40 to 100 acres. My goodness, you just, they were stone piles all over. That's when this stone crusher we're talking about come in and kind of eradicated them. That was a pretty nice deal.
Was there such extremes in weather, and was it a big factor on the small farms over larger farms?
Well, the weather, I think the weather seemed different